So, hey Gerald, thanks for jumping on the podcast, man. Really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to jump on and have a chat with me. So, how are you doing today?
Absolutely great. It's an honor for real. Doing great.
Nice one.
Excited.
Cool, cool. Why don't you kick off by sharing a bit about yourself and what you do for a living?
What I do, I always have a hard time telling people that. What is it that I do for a living? I consider myself an investor,
Yeah.
a real estate investor primarily, but I also love to invest in stocks. So I'm just always trying to take money and put money into undervalued assets that I think are going to pay cash flow or generate income.
Yep.
And in an early period of time, I put a lot of time in that and just tried to build as big a base as possible and retire from like working as far as jobs pretty early.
Yep. Yep.
So
Cool. So were
investor, I guess,
you
is what I'd call myself.
Yeah, cool. And so were you previously in a career path or a job, or what did that look like for you?
Yeah, so I go from high, like I was born, raised pretty lower middle class, and I
Yeah.
went to the army. That was what kids like me did. If I didn't have money to go to college, didn't really have interest in college, and if you just didn't know what you wanted to do, you could push that decision out by joining the military.
Yeah,
And
nice.
I, yeah, and I did that. And like life goes, you have moments where you all of a sudden your thinking changes on things. And in the army, I met a guy, and I was in his room. He was a little bit of rank above us, and kind of at that rank where they try to mentor young people. And
Yeah.
I look on his table, and he had a statement, and it said he had like $116,000. And I'd never, I was, and it was just a
Baffled by that,
moment.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I'd
Yeah.
never met any. I'm a poor kid. No one has $100,000 where I came from.
Yeah.
And that was the first moment that I realized, like, average people. Like normal people with normal jobs could amass lots of money if they just lived a different way or thought differently. Yeah. And
So
he
he
was going
played
to
a
be
kind of
putting it
mentor role.
yeah. So I'm like, holy, what are you going to do with that? And he, his, and I remember distinctly, and I wish I could, I've tried to look him up and I haven't been able to find him, but he was going to buy like, one of those fast lube oil changing businesses, where you go in, they just change oil. That's all they do.
Yeah,
Yeah, and so this is
like a
20
service
something
station
years
thing.
ago. And so, shit, for all I know, he owns 100 of those now.
Yeah, wow. So you're in the military then, and were you there for a couple of years, and then
Yeah, so I
where did
did
you head off to?
almost 7 years. I did the marry the high school. I kind of did everything wrong in the first part of my life. I married my high school sweetheart. We got her pregnant. I'm divorced 2 years later. Child support. I'm in the army, no college. So all these things are kind of like not the ideal way you should go about doing things. And having that moment there, and then I ended up having to re-enlist in the army because I was in such a bad financial situation. And then I remember, and I would again think back on the guy who had the money, and here I had made basically every decision wrong. Like we bought a brand new car, we're making payments, we got credit cards. Just no plan, just living, right? And then I re-enlisted, we got divorced, and then I just had like a soul searching moment in that point. It was shortly I get out of the army, I have $12,000 to my name, and I meet a guy, long story short, and talks to me about real estate, just like a guy, just a norm, just a guy. And he but he had a few dollars, he had a successful business, and he basically told me what he would do with that money
Yeah.
and gave me a little book to read, and it was on real estate investing. And within 3 months, I'd bought two houses.
Nice. Putting into action what you learned.
And all it was, he said, look, man, find a messed up property. It's going to have problems. That's why it's on sale. But make sure it's problems that you think you can handle. And then
Yeah.
just spend the time handling it. And I basically did that. I bought a house for it was 22, no, no, $35,000. I ended up putting 7,500 down, And I still own it today. It's mortgage free, rents for like 850. I think it's 850 or 900.
Nice.
And that. So then and during this time I started I worked part-time as a prison guard.
Yeah.
And so that gave me like a grand a month guarantee. I know it didn't sound like much, but this is 1999.
Yeah, it's probably a decent wage back then.
It wasn't bad. It was actually a what you call a really good part-time job because it gave you health benefits and $1,000 a month.
Yeah.
And I would just give that to my wife, and she worked full-time. And I said, hey, I've got this idea. Why don't we just save all of the money that I make for 7 to 10 years? We'll invest literally every penny. Mm-hmm. And then if we do that correctly, we may never need to work again, you know?
Yeah. And was that all into real estate, or was that stocks?
The very first, originally it was all real estate. That's because I learned it from that guy.
Yeah.
And I got to 5 houses. And then, nice. You know, as you go through this journey, I've got it to where I'm making like $1,500 a month cash flow on those 5, right around that, on those 5 properties. And I'm living really frugal, and I'm mowing yards. I'm doing anything I can do to make money on the side. So I've got where I'm saving $4,000 to $6,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just through that process, you start learning about dividend stocks, and I started reading about that. And so I just came up with a strategy that worked for me. And it mm-hmm. was where we have crazy weather going. Yes. So took all the money that I made actively working, and I would just save for 5-6 months. I would put down a payment on a messed up house. And then I would spend the next few months working on the house. Like, I wouldn't hire people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't have to, people all the time. One of the pushbacks, whenever I post this, they'll say that's the most ineffective way to do it. And people will make comments. You shouldn't be over there working, as if it's demeaning to work on your own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I would save enormous amounts of money by doing my own painting. I've put in carpet, like all these things. You can just learn them on YouTube.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you've met these people who work. They're not rocket scientists. It's mm-hmm. it's not the most complicated things. And so I would save enormous amounts of money doing that. And that helped with equity, and that helped with, you know, cash flow. And I would just kept reinvesting it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes stocks are on sale. So like 2003. I was involved in that. I was just kind of doing it, stock investing. So I mm-hmm. didn't know what to do with that. Like, I just rode that out.
Was that after the tech bubble?
Or? Yeah, the tech bubble. I was just starting to do stocks. So to be honest, I didn't really know what I was doing other than just buying some shares. But then after that, as I began to educate myself and study and read books and, you know, try to get serious and go down all the little rabbit holes, I'm sure everybody else goes down, options and commodities. I did all these things.
Forex.
Forex, all these things. And I finally just realized what was really working for me was buying assets that paid me money and just holding them over long periods of time.
Yeah.
And then buying them when they're on sale. So like when 2008 happened, I mean, I bought a lot of stock, like Ford at $1.50. And it was just taking large companies that I knew weren't going to go out of business and just investing in them.
Yeah.
You know, right before we got on the call, I was doing that today. Mortgage REITs have really come down in America. They're down like 20-something mm-hmm. percent because of interest rate fears and all this and that, you know.
Yeah. And so in terms of the stocks,
mm-hmm.
you said you kind of just, after the tech bubble happened, you were just kind of buying.
Yes.
Obviously, you know, you had a bit of a strategy and you know, you're constantly reading and learning and
mm-hmm.
kind of upskilling yourself. How did you then go about, you know, choosing these companies? Was it just a case of, like you say, choosing companies that you knew were reputable and were very unlikely to go out of business?
Exactly. And so I think sometimes people make this way more complicated than it needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I mean, you could really bog yourself down in study and then never do anything. And I would just do stuff that seemed obvious to me. Like, we're at Walmart and it's always full.
Yeah.
And then I look and Walmart's down 50%. And so is everything else. So it obviously has nothing to do specifically with Walmart.
Yeah.
And so to
it's
me,
a broader economic climate and whatever else is going on in the economy. And
you don't have to be a, you know, certified financial advisor to see that and go, okay. One of them that I made a lot of money, and I think these come all the time. On my podcast, I call it the money flow. If you just watch the flow of money. I live in Texas, so it's oil country. So I have renters who work for oil companies, and all of a sudden they're having to move, and oil prices are dropping. And I want to say it was 2015, and it went from like $100 a barrel to literally under $30 a barrel.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just began to study this, even though I lived in Texas, a lot of that I was a child, so I don't really remember the ups and downs of the oil market.
Yeah.
And you just go back and read, and you're like, damn, this happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. And I would just read it. I go, wow, this happens all the time. What would be a logical, low-risk way to profit from this? And it was, I just put like $30,000 in Exxon, Chevron, and ConocoPhillips. That's not rocket science.
Mm-hmm.
But I did it when oil, the price of oil went below the cost of actually drilling it out of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It can't stay so there. Right? I mean,
yeah. And so did you just, you know, hold those shares?
Yes.
Till this day or a certain point where you felt.
So what I do, I use what I call a core strategy. So if I take I'm never going to buy something with the idea of selling it in a week. That just, it doesn't make sense to me. But so when I buy something, I literally, when I buy it, I'm like, okay, I'm going to own this for the rest of my life. And so it keeps you from just moving in and out. And then, mm-hmm. So what I would do when the time looks beautiful, like the price is too low, I'll buy a lot more than I want to own for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And as I'm proven right over time, as the price comes up, and I use some indicators because I am a trader. I use various indicators for chart reading and whatnot. And when the price is overpriced, I'll look to sell a little bit of that to put to work in something else that's underpriced.
Yeah. So it's a constant kind of flow between, exactly. If something's overpriced, you'll sell off, put it into something that's undervalued, and allow that to ride up.
And so I think last time I checked, I had 41 various stocks, ETFs, closed-end funds. There's like 41 of them in the portfolio.
Yeah,
And I used to be a nerd about it, and I would rank them. Like, if you ever watch Jim Cramer, he ranks them 1 to 5. And I would, you can just get carried away with all of this. Now I've been doing it, you know, 18 years. I can just look at them. I know them. It's like following a football team for long enough. You just know everything about it.
Yeah.
You don't have to look it up. You just know. And
yeah,
I'll be like, wow, okay, all of the utility stocks are way overpriced right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the market's selling. Like, there's logical reasons for a lot of these things.
Yeah.
And I would sell some shares, not a lot. Like, I did that recently. I sold 50 shares of Southern Electric to purchase some higher yield in Anley Capital. It's been really beat up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just moving. And in that situation, I'm actually raising the portfolio yield. Like, I'm going from a 5% yielder that was 5 when I bought it. It's now 4. And I'm moving mm-hmm. that to something that's in the 10 range.
Yeah.
And so I don't know a term for that. I'm sure there is a term for that, where I'm rolling the yield into a higher yield by mm-hmm. investing into the ones that are underpriced, right?
Yeah. And so those 41 stocks that you mentioned there, mm-hmm. are they all dividend payers?
Yes. Yes. I have a couple, 2 gold stocks. They don't trade. They don't have dividends. They're gold stocks.
Okay.
And I will do the strategy I just described. Right now, gold's heating up if you watch U.S. stock market. So those gold stocks were probably going to outperform.
Yeah.
And I will probably downsize them when gold gets overpriced, you know.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just get that wrong. But it is a portfolio. I'm not responsible to anyone but myself. I'm right enough that I can work my way out of these things. And sometimes you can just say, well, shit, I got that one wrong, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It ain't the end of the world. Because no one position is going to blow you out.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you mentioned that in one of your videos that I watched, that, mm-hmm. you know, you're going to get one in maybe 10 or 20 mm-hmm. that are just absolute flops that, you know, crash and burn. But
that happens, you know, in real estate too. 19. A lot of people don't, because sometimes I listen to the debates between stocks and real estate, and it makes me laugh because I love both asset classes, and I think there's a time for each, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I mean, if you look next door and the house is cheap, you should buy it. Don't worry about stocks.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have stocks, just let them sit. Let them sit there and collect dividends. You don't need to do anything with them. But if you look over there and it's, wow, these houses are 5 times more than they should be. Well, there's other places to look to make money.
Yeah.
It's kind of my thought on it.
Yeah. And then in terms of the dividend income, I love mm-hmm. that, you know, you have this kind of concept of just constantly going broke. So anytime you save up and earn, a good chunk of money, I think you mentioned it was $5,000, you'll just deploy that, and go back to zero because, what use is that in your bank account? You may as well get it into an asset that's gonna flow cash, right?
Exactly. And here's what happens. Let's say you're a guy that sometimes that I was using that number because that would take me originally like a couple months of saving, saving, saving. And I meet guys who that's 1 month, right? So these numbers are relative. And so what I always tell people, you'll either add a zero, take a zero away. The concept is the same. A 16-year-old kid could do it and it could be $500. Imagine if me and you had started doing that with $500 as kids. We would probably be sitting on hundreds of grand when we were young adults, you know? And so, yeah, the 5,000 increment worked for me. And if it was a house, then I would have to go more. Because when I originally started buying houses, the down payment range was between $7,000 and $10,000.
Okay, yeah.
Today, I'm looking at 15 to 20,000, maybe a little more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so over that time, have those properties obviously increased in value significantly since you first purchased them? Yeah.
Some I don't even know how to. I mean, you'd have to be a technical nerd to. I'm sure there's ways to put values on some of them, but like I have one that I'm working on today. I'm literally here today. I paid 22 grand for it in like 2004. I put 10 into fixing it up. It's never had a mortgage, you know, I paid cash. And it's been rented ever since, you know. And then it's worth like 150 grand.
Cheers.
There's a way to, I mean, obviously you can input all that and get a return, but it's got to be in the thousands. I mean, I'm guessing. And then, you know, one the other day I did a video and I originally purchased it. I put 16,000 down. My loan was 80 something grand. It's been paid on for 10 years. The loan's down to 42. The house is now worth 160. So I just took the loan back to the original loan, and my mortgage payment is basically the same as it was last month, except now
And
I
you
got it
started all over again?
started all over again, and I got a check for 40 grand.
Yeah.
I increased my debt for sure, but I was already servicing that debt. Like, it's no big deal. It's not a lot of debt.
Yeah, it wasn't an issue, and it's being covered by the mortgage payments, right?
Exactly. It's cash flowing at like almost 600 a month. I still have 50% equity in it because it's doubled in 10 years. So, I mean, obviously I could get out of the deal if for some reason I needed to. But then I took that 40, and to me, I thought the right now where I'm in my situation, the best the things I can see are in stocks. So I immediately 25,000 of it transferred to the brokerage account, and you know, the other money I set aside to try to find a house. So we're going to try to do that. But I moved that into that account. So it's out of my checking. It's already allocated.
Yeah, towards
Go
one of the
broke.
assets.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or after a while, your
So
wife would be like, a new purse.
yeah. So you mentioned there, talking back if we were kids or young adults, what we would do. But what would you do, or what would you say to someone maybe listening to this podcast if they're in their, let's say late teens or early 20s, even early 30s? What kind of advice would you give them, in terms of real estate and stocks and like the mindset around it all?
You know, conventional thought is you want to tell, like we have a famous guy here does a radio show, and he always tells them, you know, focus on college and this. I don't know. I think that's the wrong. One, avoid all debt. Money not going out is the same as money coming in. So, and I tell my son this all the time because he has a friend and she, you know, it's only $50,000 in college debt. I'm like, yeah, but you understand if you have 50 in cash and they have 50,000 in debt, that's not a $50,000 problem. That's a $100,000 problem.
Yeah,
Like
because of
they,
the interest. Yeah.
yeah. And so if they need 50 just to get to zero. So the difference between having a positive 50 and being in debt 50 is enormous. It's not 50, right? It's
Yeah.
100, the difference between the two. So avoiding debt, but then I would play in the stock market. I mean, my son is 16 years old. He makes money, and I have him in three funds, and every month he puts money in those, you know.
Yeah.
And I would at a young age. I mean, I would do that. And if your mind is in that, it's an odd young person who's going to dig into finance. But, and the other thing too, I mean, if I was going to go into real estate, I did single family housing, but I don't know. I would just look to see where's the best opportunity at the time. Cause you'll see a lot of people swear by apartments. You need to do only apartments. Well, right now apartments are not the where to be in my area. They're too expensive.
Mm-hmm.
There's no value there. You're buying an you're buying an expensive asset. It's like trying to flip a Louis Vuitton purse. I mean, it's already expensive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's harder, right?
Yeah.
But honestly, right. I mean, we both know the earlier you come to these ideas of compounding and cash flow and really getting, you know, I get the biggest pushback from kids all the time. I talk to a lot of people on Instagram and their complaint will be for $5,000, you're only getting $50.
Mm-hmm. That's what my next kind of question was going to be. You know, mm-hmm. I think a lot of people look at maybe the return that you're going to get and,
yes,
you know, let's say it's 2-4% in terms of dividends and maybe, yeah, you know, 4-10% year on year.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll just get not overwhelmed, but just
not, it's not
think
exciting.
It's worth it in the end. Yeah,
it's not exciting.
And of course, it's not in the week to week cycle. Mm-hmm. But like you say, it's the compounding over many years and the long term thinking, which I think is completely missing in, you know, our society today, because everything's instant and it's, you know, gratification and people don't think long term.
Yeah. And it doesn't look like a fun game. I always try to explain that to my son, is that when I turn the TV on in the morning, like if I'm getting coffee every morning, I turn on to the financial channel.
Yeah.
And I see in my mind, I'm playing a giant game of financial chess.
Yeah.
And so to me, it's exciting. You know, I can move, yeah, and anybody can play in this game. You can buy the same thing Warren Buffett's buying tomorrow. It's right from your phone. And if you're really good at it, you can get really rich really fast.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a game that's promoted. You know, people would rather be YouTubers or whatever else, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then here's an example. Like, we have an indoor water park here in Texas. It's an indoor water park,
yep,
which is, Texas is, it's, that's a crazy idea because it's so hot outside, but it was really, really cool. And they gave you these wristbands and you didn't carry money because you're inside a water park. You can't really carry money. And so you would just, yep, do this little wristband and it would give you a soda. Do it, it would give you food, anything, all through this whole park, beer. You just show them your badge, they give you a beer. And all I see is people spending money. Like it's packed. I go look it up. It's a $2.50 stock. And I'm like,
the pool is?
Yeah. This company that owned these indoor water parks. It was, I'm trying to think of the name now. It's not Great Wolf Lodge. It was one similar to that. And so it's like Splash Town or Wet n Wild, but it's indoors.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a giant hotel in there and it's like just a crazy water park. So I bought 1,000 shares and I'm reading on the company while we're there. And I'm like, wow, these guys are making a fortune. How have I never heard of this? And so I just bought $2,500 within 12 months, man, a private equity firm took that thing public or took it private and paid everyone $14 a share.
Wow.
But I have like 20 stories like that. Like,
yeah,
these aren't complicated. I was standing in Walmart and I saw a lady in a red shirt scanning items. And I was like, excuse me, what are you doing? And she said, quality control. And I looked, and these people weren't working for Walmart. And I looked on my smartphone, and it said, these are the people when you have inventory problems. These are the people you call.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and looked it up online, all the different stock sites. Nobody says anything about Walmart having quality control problems. So I waited, and then the earnings came out, and the CEO said they were having inventory problems. Stuff was getting clogged. It wasn't distributing effectively throughout America, and they were losing revenue because of this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was right there. They're already working on it, right?
Yeah.
They're fixing it. And the stock got creamed, dude. And then something else happened. And for over like a two-week period, it goes down like 20-something percent. And so I bought a bunch of shares. It's just being in the money flow, man. Just paying attention to the news, the world around you, and how money moves.
Yeah, I think it's that mindset of just being aware of what's actually going on and, you know, the products and services that you are consuming and buying and other people are
Yeah.
buying.
You've seen them, right? I'm sure
Who's
you've
behind
experienced
that?
that in your life and you look back and you're like, damn, I knew
Yeah.
that. I saw that. I was buying that, like Netflix.
Yeah, I think back to specifically for me, it's the PlayStation and Xbox era where I know it still exists, but back whenever I was at high school and I was playing, you know, that constantly every night, and then the companies that were behind, you know, those games or those whatever you call them, like gaming platforms. It's like, had I, you know, invested in Microsoft at the age of 15 or 10 even, you know, and it's now like $125 stock.
Nike. I mean, we both watched that become a phenomena.
Yeah.
One that I did buy into was Starbucks. I mean, I witnessed that, you know.
Yeah.
And you can't
So
buy them all, so that's not my suggestion. But if you just become observant and conscious of the moments around you, I think you just find these all the time.
So what's maybe, you know, a company or product or trend at the minute that you are observing and think that, you know, the next 5, 10, 15 years is going to potentially pop or be a big hit?
Not a big hit, but what I'm concerned about is automobiles.
Yeah.
I own a bunch of shares of Ford, and it pays a nice dividend. I'm scratching my head on where the future of that is.
Yeah. With Tesla, you mean, or
Where
just
would
the
just every, I
whole kind
mean,
of.
just the whole everything. I mean, you know, will we even be making a combustible engine in 20 years? Because I buy to hold these for life. So when I'm a 70-year-old man, is this a problem, you know?
Yeah.
But as far as, oof, looking good, man. You know what's funny is as I've been doing this longer and longer, I catch myself looking less and less at like what's the, and I probably should. This was probably my age coming out. But it's more of like where's the value in what I already own? Because I own so many, it's like, do you need to add another?
Yeah.
Or and I'm more so doing sector analysis. Like right now, I'm kind of excited about mortgage-backed security, all the various REITs and closed-end funds in that whole sector.
Yeah.
Interest rates problem, you know, it puts pressure on that industry. Is that industry going away? No, not at all.
Yeah.
And they're 20% cheaper than they were 2 months ago. Well, I'm interested. Because of the nature of the market, fear and greed, it always goes too low and it always goes too high.
Yeah.
And your timing doesn't have to be perfect, just has to be where there's value. So long-term trend, man, I don't know. I wonder that. But in the short term, I mean, there's lots of stuff opening up.
Yeah.
I would follow, honestly, and if you mentioned that young person and what I'd be looking at, every morning I'm looking at where's the S&P, where's the Dow, where's gold, where's oil? Where's interest rates? If I look at those seven and understand what I'm looking at, then it really makes everything else make sense. A lot of things begin
And
to
so
make
what,
sense, you know?
yeah. So what goes through your head whenever you are looking at them? You know, because I'm conscious there's probably people listening to this that maybe don't even know what the S&P 500 is, but let's say they do. But what goes through your head whenever you are looking at those things on the news?
Mainly I'm looking to see. For me, I use charts and I'm always
Yeah.
looking at where is price in relation to the 20-day moving average. Because I have a very simple strategy. If it's above it, we're moving up. If it's below it, we're moving down.
Yeah.
And I tend to think things stay in motion until they're no longer in motion. So I don't need to worry, well, is it going to go up tomorrow? I don't know that. I know today it's going down. So I'm observing that. Why are we in a downtrend? So right now, the US stock market, and the way I look at stocks, we're in a downtrend. So that means to me, hey, if I can get my hands on some more cash, I need to get ready. There's going to be some bargains.
Yeah.
And so I'm scanning sectors. Where's the biggest discount? Right now it's in mortgage REITs for the
Yeah.
US, you know. What do you guys call it? The FTSE 50, 500 or something in England?
I don't actually know what the exact equivalent is
I
over
think it's the
here.
FTSE. I may be mistaken on that. But every country has it. I think Germany, it's the DAX.
Yeah, so the FTSE is the equivalent, yeah, of I guess the S&P,
And so if I'm you, I'm going to keep my eye on that. What's the lending rate? I mean, for mortgages, like I just refinanced and it was 5.7%.
Yeah.
That's pretty high. You know, 4 years ago, I paid 3.7.
Mm-hmm.
I run a multi-million dollar portfolio. So $2 million and you're going into refinance, the numbers get 2% can make a big difference, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's that to consider. So you want to keep an eye on, you know, where are mortgage rates? If mortgage rates go up, housing prices are coming down. That's how that they have an inverse reaction to each other. If you notice, I've been noticing lately, I've been getting lots of emails that like Discover, my local bank, they're all having these 2.3, 2.4 savings rates.
Mm-hmm.
If that continues, the stock market will come down. It's just the way things are priced. Because why would you put money in a stock paying you 2% when you could put it in the bank getting 3% with no risk?
Yeah, for guarantee. Yeah.
If you're old, not all of us. Not all of us are going to do that, but old people are, right?
Yeah.
Or at least scared ones are.
Yeah.
And so that could create an imbalance for me and you. All of a sudden, we're going to see these high-quality stocks get mispriced as all the – because money doesn't come out in nice little even trickles. It comes out in rushes.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden, stocks get priced down 10, 20, 30% or whatever, and you find yourself – you have a deal.
Yeah.
And so are you studying history, man. That really helped me to just study history.
Mm-hmm.
Like what happened after the Great Depression or what happened – I'm sure you guys have similar – things, but what happened to the U.S. stock market after 9/11?
Yeah.
It fell 20% like in one day.
Yeah. But then rapidly recovered, right?
Yeah. But if you were a guy who was already following these things, you already watched it every morning, you had a chance to make a lot of money, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But you had to, you had to be there and be doing it. So I would do it even if I didn't have money. If you don't have money, you still follow it.
Yeah. Just to learn and to... Yeah, I guess get knowledge, right?
And then, back to real estate, I mean, with the online platforms, guys can invest in real estate without even physically owning it anymore.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So in terms of learning and upskilling yourself in all of this, do you think, yes, it's a process of switching on your mindset to be aware of everything and like you call it the money flow.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of, books or mentors, what would you suggest people do or where should they go to seek that kind of information and knowledge out?
It's a tough one, right? There's so much information. The mentor guru thing scares me. I follow a lot of these guys and I read their stuff. It blows my mind. Some of them charge $3,000, $4,000, $5,000.
Yeah.
Because everything I learned for free, basically. I mean, mm-hmm. not totally. Like, I've bought Grant Cardone's $49. It's a reasonable price. So
mm-hmm.
I'll pay you. You got something for $49? I'm all ears. And so I've bought lots of those things, of $100, $200, training courses, books. And then I'm researched that against what other people – there's a lot of people that give a lot of value for free. Or $20, you buy their book and you learn a lifetime of information. But then you also got to filter that where you are. There are guys that'll tell you should not buy single family homes. If I followed that advice, I wouldn't be a multimillionaire. Like I wouldn't, I would have never had the money building. Where would that money have come from? I was a regular guy.
Yeah.
And so I did it through buying low priced assets that other people say you shouldn't buy. And then turning them profitable and leveraging up, so within that education space, I think that's a problem is people are different ages. They have different talents. They have different, they may be living in an area where it is perfect for flipping houses and they're reading a Forex trading course.
Yeah.
And that always makes me you need to be conscious of what's going on around you. Without going too deep down a rabbit hole of right and wrong. Like I have people sometimes who reply to my post and tell me why I'm wrong. And what they're quoting is Robert Kiyosaki,
mm-hmm.
who's an amazing guy, but he's like a billionaire doing something different than you. So the way he views the world is a little different. You know, it's a much higher view from where you're at down here, if that's where you're at, you know. I met a guy recently. He owned 11, you know, those storage facilities where you store your goods.
Yep. Like garages kind of.
Yeah. He had 1100 units.
Wow.
And their rent collection was like $100,000 a month. And all they did was run used storage buildings, you know? And I was like, well, how did you get in that? He goes, well, no, there was none in our area. So, I mean, it was that simple.
He just built them?
Yeah, he just built them. But there's no guru courses on that.
No.
You know, and there's no, I don't know. The only way I know you catch that is you're just in the money flow. You're always looking around and how's money being exchanged? Where's the value? Where's the opportunity in my town, my area? With my abilities and my skill set, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would just start taking in and learning from, I think you learn from lots of people.
Yeah. And, it's a kind of curiosity, isn't it? It's a curious mindset and being open
that's
to.
That's a good word. Yeah.
Being open to learn and, you know, hear different people's opinions and you know, learn
like
from them.
I've bought several courses on making money with options trading.
Yeah.
And after going through these extensively, I think it's dumb. Like I realized there's some people who figured out how to do it. It ain't for me. Like when I read it, but I didn't get ripped off or anything like that. I just invested a little money. And by doing that, I realized, okay, I saved myself a lot of time because I really don't like that.
Yeah. It feels a lot more like a risk, like a gamble compared to actual long-term investing, doesn't it?
Yeah. And so I just began to make things as simple as possible. What is guaranteed? Like what is really right in front of me that is so simple that it works, like it'll work. And I think if you, it doesn't have to be some crazy crypto coin. It could be something literally right next door, you know? And it's not just one thing. I also find too, if they're selling it to you really hard, you know, you don't see billionaires doing that.
No.
You know, Warren Buffett doesn't sell courses or I like these things and I have a book and I sell a book and I give a book away, but it always, you know, I get contacted by all these people and I'm sure you do online and they're selling something, a book, a course, and it's like, dude, if this does half of what you said, you wouldn't even be talking to me.
Yeah. You wouldn't be bothering with me.
Yeah, why would you bother with me if you're doing 5,000% a month?
Like, yeah.
You would just
selling
be rich.
A $10 ebook. Yeah.
Yes, it doesn't make sense, right? I don't know, man. So I just try to keep it simple and do the also for me, I got really obsessed with this idea of trying to build as big a base as possible. And I worked like 8 days a week, 7 days a week. Right now I take off 1 day a week and often don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, it's a constant. My wife is constantly like, dude, why are you working today? I'm like, because I got shit to do, you know?
Yeah.
I'm trying to make money. I'm trying to do things. But I will, like if we're going on vacation or something, then I got to turn it off, right?
Yeah, switch off.
Yeah. But I'm just always on. So, you know, if there's empty space there, then I want to try to fill it and find value, make money, and then try to invest as much of that money as possible. So that's kind of my mantra, you know?
Yeah. Going back to that question we touched on earlier about, you know, people thinking that a 3% dividend on a $100 share isn't good. What would you say to them? Like, if that's all they can invest at that specific time and that's all they're going to make for that particular month. But, you know, how do you convince them that it's worth it and that they need to think longer term? And
I don't know. I read a study that said there's a certain percentage of people who cannot, in their own mind, like it's something they're born with, they cannot envision themselves as an older person. Like when they envision that person, it's like a stranger. And if they invest money, they feel like they lost the money. Like it's gone.
Yeah.
Like it's gone. And beautiful. I kind of blame retirement accounts a little because you know in your mind that money's, you're not going to see that money until you're an old person. What if that money was right there and you could use it tomorrow? See, now you don't feel so bad about having, and I began to focus more on assets that weren't connected to retirement because it'll make me money tomorrow or next month.
Yeah.
And so I could see that money coming back. Also, the future value of time and money. I did a video here a while back, and I showed I did $10,000 in Philip Morris, or not, where Altria, it's an MO, pays 6%.
Yep.
And then I was showing what happened over a period of 10 years. So today I still own it, but it's more than doubled,
mm-hmm.
like way more than doubled. And the dividend's like 3 or 4 times more than when I did it. So is it 6%? No, it's a hell of a lot more than 6%. Because if what I'm looking at is my original paid price.
Yeah.
So I paid $10,000. And the income stream today is more like 20%
mm-hmm.
of my original purchase price.
Wow. Yeah.
So would you like 20% returns? And most people say, yeah, cool. What you do today will pay you that in 10 years.
Yeah. It's that Warren Buffett quote, isn't it? That,
yeah.
You know, someone planted a tree that you are now taking shelter under.
Yeah. And, yeah. And I just began to, I don't know, as I began to do it, as I got old, especially now as I'm older, like I enjoy investing now because I'm thinking about, dude, when I am 62, I am going to have, like it brings me joy now. Like, I don't know, it's a weird thing maybe. And it's not so much about the money per se, because I drive a 19-year-old truck. Like I just love the art. To me, it's like a game. It's an art, investing, getting a return. I just enjoy it. Like some people enjoy watching football.
Yeah, you get a kick out of it.
Yeah, and I don't think you can give that to someone. Someone just has to get it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the first rent check I got. Like the guy couldn't mail it for some reason. He ended up having to come to my house, and he comes to my house and he hands me cash, $700.
Yeah.
And then he gets in his car and drives away, you know, and I'm like, holy cow. And it occurred to me, what if I had 20 of these? You know,
yeah.
Well, that seems obvious, but it was like a moment, like seeing the guy with $100,000. Because if you gave me $100,000, it's going to pay me $1,000 a month because of what I know.
Yeah, because you'll deploy it in the right way.
Yeah, and so now I got $1,000 a month. What, I could go to Burger King with it? I could spend $600 and still have some left, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes I think, too, that's what people get tripped up in is they don't understand. You're keeping your money. You get to keep your money, and they give you money for keeping it.
Yeah.
And if you get to enough, I used to use this analogy with my son. Imagine if every day you woke up, you put on your pair of pants, and you found a $100 bill.
Yeah.
You know, that's $3,000 a month. It's not as hard as people think once you learn about these things that pay even higher interest and when to buy them, you know. So it gets pretty nice. 30% returns on $500,000 get exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just, you just got to get the numbers up bigger. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
So that's so interesting. And it's fascinating hearing your kind of mindset and the way you kind of think about, yeah, the money flow and, you know, how you deploy it into assets and all that good stuff. So kind of just wrapping up then, what would be like the one piece of advice or even quote, as cliche as that sounds, that you'd maybe just like sum up to someone if you had to leave them with something?
Here's something I do that helps me. One, I think communicating with other people doing the same thing helps.
Yeah.
Because chances are, like, your family doesn't want to hear it. They've heard it from you a million times. Mm-hmm. So finding like-minded people is an excellent strategy. And something that's always helped me grounded. I'm a huge fan of Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger. I don't invest exactly like they do, but just to listen to them talk, I often will go on YouTube when I'm working and just listen to interviews from like 1994. And then you listen to one in the year 2016 and see the exact same dude saying the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Nothing changed. And then, and you go look at everyone else and it seems to constantly change. So I don't know, just finding those people and then just sitting with them and just listening to them and getting that philosophy of buying, holding, but understanding you're receiving a return from holding.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I collected $2,900 in dividends like in the last 3 weeks. I could spend that money.
Yeah.
You know, or could invest that money, you know?
Are those dividends that are coming from stocks that you invested in 5, 10, 20 years ago?
Exactly. Yeah. So some, yeah. I think the oldest stock I own is like 17 years, but that was when I first started.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not that long a time, really.
Yeah.
And about really half not. That time I was broke, to be honest. And then when I started making some good money, I had just invested it all. Like 1 year, me and my wife invested like $80,000. So it's mm-hmm. investing huge sums of money just constantly. And doing it, if you follow me, I say it all the time, 7 to 10 years. So you just got to do it for 7 to 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then.
Sorry, I'm going off on the tangent, but then.
Yeah.
You mentioned that there's 40 stocks. Does one of those make up a significant portion, or are you sort of even across the board?
It has at times, but I, you know, that's probably a weakness of mine. I'm not very good at, because you should rebalance these things. Sometimes mm-hmm. though, it doesn't make sense to rebalance it. I was just having a conversation. A friend of mine just inherited $200,000 of Exxon stock.
Yeah.
And he's freaked out by the amount because it's way more than anything else he owns in life.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to sell it. And I'm like, so if you had inherited all of Exxon, the entire company, would you immediately break it up and sell it all?
Yeah.
And he was like, no. It's like, I know, because you're not viewing this as business.
Yeah.
Like you have all these traditional 401k advisors and financial advisors. They're all in your head right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've been told you shouldn't have concentrated wealth. Jeff Bezos didn't get rich by buying having a diversified portfolio.
No.
But he got rich through investments. It's through shares, right?
Yeah.
He owns shares in Amazon. So you can be disproportionate if you understand the business. I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah,
I've done that at times. I had an enormous position in electric companies, Southern Electric and Duke,
mm-hmm.
for my net worth. Like 20, 30% of my net worth was in them. So hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. And then that wildfire happened in California.
Yeah.
And it kind of maybe got me changing that a little bit.
Yeah.
Because they sued the bazezas out of that electric company.
Mm-hmm.
And that changed the rules of the game. It never occurred to me that the electric company could be sued for a natural fire, like a wildfire.
Yeah.
That changed the nature of the business. Yeah, it was now a new risk in a business that I own and that I was collecting about $5,000 a year in income from.
Mm-hmm.
So do we want to, you know, we have the luxury because we're owners, we could diversify down a little bit on that. I don't want to get out of it, but I may want to justify it just a little, right?
Yeah.
So I will let positions grow too large if I feel comfortable in them.
Mm-hmm.
But again, the less you know, the more diversified you should be, without a doubt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So a good one to start out with just an index fund. Just start putting money in there.
Yeah.
And then as you become more and more sophisticated and learn a little bit, maybe pull a little bit out and put it in a single company. And then just over time, you build up a portfolio.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Quality.
Yeah. I mean, that was basically the strategy.
Yeah. Well, hey. Thanks so much for jumping on the podcast. Where's the best place people can follow up with you or
Instagram, I'm sure. Yeah.
Instagram.
Yeah, Instagram at FullAuto11.
Yeah.
Just like the gun.
Nice.
FullAuto11. Hey man, I appreciate the talk.
Excellent. Yeah. Thanks, Gerald. Appreciate it.